Blog Talk Radio.
My brothers and my sisters, welcome to the PRF table. This is your host, Dr. Nate Dunlap. Also sitting here at the table is Laura Bondurant, one of the wonderful members of this PRF teaching ministry team, and also our special guest returning for her third week in this month, Dr. Karay Lynn Gordon. So I would just like to say welcome to each one of you. And also we know we have Mama sitting in the background on this evening, and so we definitely want to welcome Mama. We call her Mama around the table, but her name is Mary Ann Williams, Mrs. Mary Ann Williams. So God bless to everyone. Oh, my goodness. Listen, tonight is going to be interesting. All month we have been dealing with this theme of economics and race, and tonight is not going to be any different. So what we're going to do is we're going to get into tonight's show. We're going to allow our guests to come in and give us some opening words in just a moment. And what we've been dealing with all month, the first week we've dealt with education. Last week we were talking about equality. And tonight we're going to be focusing on politics. Now, there's some things that's going on in the news, and I will say there's some things going on in some churches. And so how we tie all that together is only God knows. So with that, Dr. Gordon, good evening to you.
Good evening, Dr. Dunlap. Good evening, Mama, and good evening to Laura and everyone else who's in the studio and our listeners this evening. How you doing, Dr. Dunlap?
My heart is heavy. My heart is heavy. There's some things going on that we can just get right into talking about. You know, for me, today is an interesting day because yesterday something happened very interesting down in Florida. And for some reason, everybody's starting to talk about things all on Facebook, social media, it's all over the news. And what's amazing to me is every time something happens in this country, people talk about stuff for 5 minutes until the next thing hits. But yet and still, the political landscape of how all of these issues are being framed, are being dealt with or not dealt with, is still there. And it's embedded in a bunch of systems and structures where people are benefiting from it. And so we can't ignore it tonight on the show, Dr. Gordon. It plays a lot into economics and race. And so we just wanted to open it up, and those who are listening with us, especially online, if you want to jump into the conversation, the telephone number to join us live is 347-215-7934. Well, Dr. Gordon, we were getting started earlier before the show started, and this whole thing about Florida came up. So what's on your mind about Florida, about this tragedy that happened down in Florida?
Well, first, Dr. Dunlap, you know, again, thank you for inviting me to the show. And, you know, I think we all just have to take a moment to really pray and pray for the families, for those affected, for the students in that school, for the administration and the staff. You know, I saw the superintendent on television last night. I believe it's probably his worst day in his career to have 17 students gunned down in one of your buildings under your watch. I pray for him and for his leadership and for his family and what he'll go through over the next weeks, months, because although the media may move from it, you know, we've seen like in areas of Columbine and Connecticut that the families and the communities that are affected, you know, even when the cameras are gone, they're still very much affected. And, you know, somehow we in this country have to get better. We have to come back to being a country, one with under God, you know, that peace, under God with liberty and justice for all has to begin to resonate again in our hearts and in our minds and in our pockets. You know, when we talk about economics and every time after one of these mass shootings, it becomes, you know, less about the people who have been killed, murdered. It becomes an issue of the NRA and gun violence. You know, we are beginning to hear a little more, thankfully, about mental health and the need. What I don't hear is that we have a mental health crisis in this country, which I think many of us, especially those of us working in the field and working in communities, would agree that we have an increasing number of mental health people and people who are suffering through mental illness. But what we're not hearing is the additional funds that is going to be provided for mental health. Yet we sell over 1 million guns. I believe I heard a statistic last night on MSNBC, 1 million guns per year in this country, right? And it's an outrageous. And I believe, actually, if I may correct myself, that's assault weapons, right?
Right.
And why are we selling that many assault weapons in this country? For what? Are we at war? You know, you would think that if we sell 1 million assault weapons that, you know, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, I could understand them buying all of those assault weapons. But why is it that we're selling so many assault weapons? And how is it that one of the brightest countries, the most innovative countries, one of the wealthiest countries in the world, we can't figure out a way to protect our children at school? There's something to be really, really said about that.
And you're absolutely right. And going back to what you said, the only way certain things happen are legally and illegally. Let's get that out there, right? The guns are not necessarily coming here illegally. A lot of the crimes that have been committed are not necessarily happening from weapons that have been secured illegally. A lot of them are being done with weapons that have been purchased legally. And we know that there's a big push, and let's just call it what it is. It's political. You mentioned the NRA. The bottom line is the NRA has a very big stronghold on our American political system. We can't get away from that, because when you hear certain things about Second Amendment, we know who's behind that. So the question then becomes, if we're going to deal with this, because you asked the question, you made a statement about how there are so many issues that are going to be there after the cameras stop. You mentioned mental health. It's not by chance that we have lined up for next month, in the month of March, Bishop Kelly Zimmerman, who will be speaking on Kimberly Solis's show, Your Health is Your Wealth, and they will be dealing with mental health all next month. It's not by coincidence that is already lined up. And what's amazing is people are talking so much about mental health right now, but what happened last time? One of these things happened. People talked about it, and then it died down. So the part of this whole Go ahead, Dr. Gordon.
No. I agree. We you know, we get excited and then it dies down. And you know, because we're on you know, you've mentioned the NRA and the stronghold that the NRA has. You know, I think one of the bigger problems that we have in this country right now, and many people are seeing it and we're facing it, is we are foolish if we believe that we still have a two-party system. We really have a one-party system at this point. And both of the major political parties are funded by the same operatives. So the NRA funds just as much on the left as it does on the right, even when the left is talking against it. They never really are quite banning it. They just want to ban a certain part of it because they're still getting paid to to allow the rest of it, you know. It's kind of like, you know, our unions. Somewhere along the line in this country, you know, unions used to be, and the Democratic Party used to really stand for the working class people, you know, which are the people that we see now being most angry, the working middle class, you know, that had a union that ensured their job, that ensured that they had regular raises, that ensured that they would have appropriate health benefits so that they could continue to work and protect and provide for their children. And somewhere along the lines, the unions became so powerful and political that they also began to sell out their membership. And once they started to sell out their membership to the same politicians that big business is, big business now in turn has turned around and is now selling out the unions. And, you know, we see this a lot in education. I can really speak to it in education, right? The teachers union being one of the most powerful unions in the world and constantly, you know, funding politicians and now fighting for survival because of the continuous breakdown of public education, with the big business and charter schools and corporations have found that there's so much money in education and in schools. And there's so much more money if we can put people in classrooms that we don't have to pay the unions, right? So, you know, once if we can get to a place where we once again can rally as the working people and begin to put our dollars together. But unfortunately, I think so often the common man, you know, and I ran for office in 2017, you know, the common man is struggling so hard that either, A, he doesn't have the money to put towards elections and donate to campaigns to make any substantial difference. You may get some campaign donations, but certainly not as much as the NRA can put up or a teachers union can put up or the Koch brothers can put up or any of these giant corporations that are really about greed. And they're on both sides. You know, in New York City, Bill de Blasio outpaced the highest Republican by almost $7 or $8 to 1. So, and a lot of his money came from corporations around the city. We see the same thing here in the Bronx, where working people are being displaced at a rapid, rapid, rapid rate. You know, across New York City, we have 45% of our students in temporary housing or in shelters. 45%. If that number doesn't alarm people, then you might as well just hang up the phone now. 45% of our students are living in temporary housing and in shelters or with family members or anything other than their own stable home. That's a crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, that leads to stress. That leads to induced mental illness. That leads to some of the violence and the outbreaks that we see inside schools. We've had a number of stabbings and violent episodes here, not anything, thank God, as horrific as what we saw yesterday in Broward County, but nonetheless, the violence and the tension and the suspension rates are all increased, you know, and all of that, we may think, hey, what does that have to do with politics? But the political climate that we're in right now is affecting us all, you know, and the lack of jobs is affecting us all.
And so I'll shift gears on something that you said about how you talked about selling out, right? You talked about people are selling out their memberships. You talk to. I'm just gonna go there, y'all know me. I'm just gonna go there. I'm gonna bring the church as an institution into this conversation, and I love for somebody to just let's go in the next 15 minutes on this, because one of the most powerful institutions historically in our country has been the Black church. one of the most powerful. Because the black church, once upon a time, and the black quote-unquote preacher slash pastor and or pastor, when their pulse was on the community, from what folk keep telling me, right, especially older folks, the pulse was on the community. And I can say down in the South as well as up north in Philly. But a lot of that is gone now when it comes to politics. And so if the church is not getting involved in politics, and let me say it, and stop acting like cowards when it comes to politics, or engaging really quietly so nobody knows where we stand, that's cowardice. That's operating out of a spirit of fear. And I'll say this when it comes to how many times, and anybody can respond to this, how many times, and I can say in the black church, I've known it to be in the black church, right? When it comes time for elections, how many times has pastors allowed individuals to come in when it's time for elections? And how many times have we heard, I'm speaking Dunlap now, have we heard, this is not going to be my last time? How many times have we heard, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that? But then when that joker or jokette does not win, they don't come back to that same church. They don't lock arms with that particular congregation to see, what can we do together? And so how does that deal with economics and race? I could say race from a black perspective. It affects it tremendously. Because one, if you don't vote, then you have nothing to say about what's affecting your race. If you don't get involved in the process, some folks may not agree with that, but I say it strongly. Don't complain about what happens in the process. The people who are in position get in position all the time, not because of some of the money that they have. In the state of Alabama, Alabama is known as a red state, Republican. And going to the polls, people in the state of Alabama would tell you that a high percentage of individuals in elections go unopposed on a Republican ticket. Now, I'm not saying you need to vote one way or the other, but what I am saying is if people continue to go unopposed and folks don't get into the fight, don't complain years and years later when that same individual becomes the Attorney General of the United States. See, it started in Alabama, but now they're in the United States, a cabinet position. Can't complain about the person then, Dr. Gordon. Black folk can't complain now when black folk had an opportunity to do something about it. And that doesn't mean it's only black people. When we deal with this economics and race piece, there's white folk that get affected just as well. But I wanted to throw that out there because the church has a responsibility when it comes to politics. Let me say this. And by and large, listen, I say this to any of my friends and colleagues. If you're scared and you're nervous about your 501c3, get rid of it. Every church does not have to have a 501c3 status, a tax-exempt status. Many of them don't even use it, don't know how to use it. So that status can't be the thing that holds anybody back from exercising what they know to be things that are unjust in our political system and using that voice of justice, which God has given all of us. But go ahead, Dr. Gordon.
Well, Dr. Dunlap, you bring up multiple issues. I want to respectfully talk about the black church and definitely don't want to disrespect all the lives and souls that have been saved through mm-hmm. many different aspects of the black church, because like talking about anybody, and when I say body, you know, the full body. You know, there are going to be elements of the body that are cancerous and other elements of that body that are really strong. However, we know that in our communities that the church is a lot of times the hub of the community, and there is an extreme amount of political power and money that comes from the Black church. And it flows in and it flows out. And even though you talked about the 501c3 status or 501c4 status, which many churches have, you know, they know that, again, certain politicians come to them and unfortunately make the same deals that they make with business. I've seen it right here in my own community, and churches, the more astute churches and the more politically powerful churches really do know how to use that tax exemption certificate so that they're making and they're raking in millions and millions of dollars, some of these churches. You know, it is the one business in the Black community that goes unfettered, for real. They don't challenge it as much because the Black church also keeps our people humble. It keeps us from forming a revolution. It keeps us and keeps our eyes and our spirit, and please don't misunderstand what I'm saying, but a lot of times it keeps us very passive in our communities to a fault on some times where we begin to wait on God, not that we shouldn't, but we don't. We miss that faith without works is dead. We miss that Peter, who drew his sword, mm-hmm. was also a disciple, one of the closest disciples to Christ. So I don't want to go too far off there, but I also want to just talk about, you know, the fact that the Republican Party at one point, I'm really segueing away from that. You know, I remember a long time ago being a young student and I was running around with a Martin Luther King poster and I was in the company of two gentlemen who had this organization here in, well, actually in New York, but in Brooklyn, headquartered in Brooklyn, called Black Economic Survival. And, you know, I had this Martin Luther King poster, and I was so proud of it. And the brother, his name was Moses, he says, spit on it. And I was thinking, spit on it? Oh, my God, how could you say that? This is Dr. Martin Luther King, you know? And he began to shed some wisdom on me. And he began to let me know that, you know, one of the things that keeps us down is dreaming. You know, I heard someone say the other day, you know, Americans, we are not dreamers, we are doers, you know. And so, you know, the concept of dreaming versus the concept of doing. And Martin Luther King, he pointed out, was not killed as long as he was talking about free at last, thank God Almighty, I'm free at last, and talk about the dream of holding hands, you know. That was fine. He could deliver that message, which ties right back to the church. But the minute King actually approached to cross the Union and to cross the Union line and to begin to demand that not on the social side, but on the economic side, that there was a certain amount of equality, King was killed, right? And for many, miss that is when it became an issue. As long as you were leading people into the promised land and we're holding hands, there's no threat. But the minute that you start to think that you're going to build some sort of economic wealth behind a leader, you now become a threat. And I look at what has happened inside the Republican Party, and most of us know from our history that, you know, at one point in history that Black membership was stronger in the Republican Party than the Democratic Party, and then we began to make that social shift rather than the economic shift. Because the Democrats were, and we're talking about were, not really the parties right. that we have right now, but the Democrats right. were, you know, a party of social issues, the Democrats, and the Republicans are a party of financial or economic issues. And at some point, we began to shift more to the left, and moved away from the right, and the right continued to grow and build wealth in this country, And we began to have more social issues. We talked about Brown v. Board of Ed and those things that actually really retarded our growth in this country in a lot of ways. And there was an upsurge and a movement more back towards the right with people of color, Latinos and blacks. And then we saw this infiltration now of the white supremacists, which I think is really ironic. So when we talk about race and politics, you know, we have to begin to look at things in a really holistic way. And how is it now that the party, the money party, has actually, you know, armed guards with tiki torches surrounding it and keeping a barrier from anyone of color to even enter that party anymore? Certainly there's a few people who have come through, but you and I know what to say and not say about them. But we know that they're not really building a whole lot of wealth on the other side. At least not,
right.
Even if
right.
they are, they're not sharing the wealth. They're not sharing the ideas of wealth. They're not sharing equity, right?
So,
go ahead, I didn't mean to cut you.
No. So one of the things that in the last couple of minutes, I'll throw one more bombshell out there to really let people understand how economics and race plays within this landscape of politics. So last week, some of you know that we held a legacy conference in Philadelphia. We were at New Beginning Church of Philadelphia, and that's my home, so it was great to be back home. But on Friday, we got there and, you know, chilling out before the big day on Saturday. And the pastor, Reverend Dr. Michael Couch, really grateful for him and his hospitality and everybody there. He's told me that he was speaking at this forum on Friday night. And I was like, hey, man, well, listen, you know, I'm going to come and support that and just be a part of that, you know, because I don't get home that often. And, you know, he told me just to rest. But we talked a little bit about this forum, and the forum was about safe ejection sites. And I can't get into it because we'll be done in about 3 minutes. But here's what was interesting. I didn't know anything about safe ejection sites because I live down south. But safe injection sites were being a plan has already started to move forward from the politicians and some of the politicians in Philly. And safe injection sites is a way of dealing with the opioid crisis. Philadelphia is like the worst when it comes to the opioid epidemic that's been through our news, right? And within our political atmosphere recently. And what was amazing is, until somebody brought it up to challenge that political landscape that is out there, mostly nobody knew about it, what the city was doing. And what was interesting, even so more so than that, was the people that were crying out and then the politicians from the district. Now, here's what's interesting. Economics and race is what we're talking about. This was not in the black community. The Kensington area of Philadelphia, or KSI, back when I was young, as a black man, I didn't really go into Kensington, KSI area. Just, you know, you just certain areas you just stayed away from, whether you were white and black. And so many people were having conversations about it. I just challenge everybody to go and look it up. And what was interesting as we get ready to go was this. Some people were talking about the economics position with this whole thing. Some people said this. They said, you know, it's amazing that this crisis of opioid that affects primarily white folks, and we know it's in the white part of town, they're wanting to do something about it. Now, whether you disagree or agree, that's another conversation for another time. But the amount of money that is going to go into these safe injection sites, which means this, they're going to have these sites where people get clean needles and they can shoot up their illegal drugs in these sites. But here's the thing, economics and race. It is not going to be done where people of wealthy means actually live. They're not going to put this in a place where people who have financial means are. They're going to keep it in that area. And so what we do really need to be talking about, or make sure that we continue this conversation, is that it's not just all about black folk. Now, the flip side of that is there's no safe smoking sites that has ever been suggested, Dr. Gordon, for people who smoke crack. So we have to look at this thing and say when certain things come up from the political landscape, we have to look at what race of people are they affecting and what's the economic impact that is going to have on all people. And so with that, we say thank you, Dr. Gordon. Thank you for being with us. And from everybody here at the PRF table, we just we want us to continue these conversations. So follow us on Facebook. PRF Institute is where you can find us on Facebook. And also keep up with what we have going on at prfministry.org. And so with that, Dr. Gordon, God bless you, my sister. We will hopefully see you on next week. And if not, we'll talk to you soon. God bless y'all. God bless you. God bless you. Peace.
God bless you, Dr. Dunlap. Have a great week.